Building Bridges, Your Community and Labor Report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash.
Later on Building Bridges, a warning on Obamanomics by Professor William Tabb. But first,
are we really out of money? Well, that really depends on the definition of are we. Who is the we? So I'm going to ask Les Leopold, author of The Looting of America, How Wall Street's Game of Fantasy Finance Destroyed Our Jobs, Pensions, and Prosperity, if the coffers are really empty, and if so, what we can do about it. So we have no money, or do we?
Well, you and I may have no money.
Well, that's for sure.
But there's been an enormous, enormous transfer of wealth starting in the mid-1970s to the tippy top of the income scale. And there's a ton of money up there. And actually, that's the source of our economic crisis to begin with. It's an incredible story. But that money, which in theory was supposed to be invested in the economy, and much of it was, but it actually ran out of places where good investments could take place. And Wall Street knew this, and they created these new fantasy financial instruments to suck up this money. And those are the instruments that went bust and has caused this global financial crash, a crash that we haven't seen since the Great Depression.
So let's elaborate on some of these fantasy economics. I'm sure our listeners by now have heard some of them, but I want to hear you tell it like it is.
If you're a wealthy person, what happened was that Wall Street came up with creating financial instruments that paid a little bit more than a normal corporate bond and a normal treasury note or something like that. And the way they did it is they took risky debt and put it into pools and chopped up the pools in a certain way so that the risk was different at different places where you chopped it up. You got to use a fancy word here to make it make sense. You got to say tranche. If you can use the French word tranche for slice, then you're talking high finance. So they tranched these pools and sold them as if they had very little risk. Then they did something else which is even more amazing. It got to bring all these pools of subprime mortgages and stuff together. That takes time. You have to get 1,000 mortgages and get claim to them, entitled to them. That was a pain in the butt. So they came up with a way to do it using something called the synthetic collateralized debt obligation, which is really a fancy word for an insurance policy. They came up with a way to put insurance on these pools, so they didn't even have to own them. So people started buying and selling securities that actually had ownership to nothing. They were just bets. It would be as if you and I were betting on your neighbor's house to burn down, or if 10,000 people were betting on your neighbor's house to burn down. In the insurance industry, you're not allowed to do that. You have to actually have a material interest in what you're insuring. But in these fancy finance instruments, you didn't have to have an interest in what you were insuring. You didn't own anything. Well, you can imagine when the underlying housing prices finally started to go down, which they had to because they were rising at unbelievable levels because they were pumped up by this fantasy finance boom. When they started going down, not only did the subprime mortgages start having problems and people have difficulty paying their debts, but all these fantasy finance instruments stacked on top of them like planes at JFK, they all came crashing down. I mean, ask yourself this question. There are only $300 billion worth of subprime mortgages that are in trouble. How come we're hearing about $2-4 trillion of toxic assets? That's because of all these levels of fantasy finance toxic assets that were built on top of these subprime mortgages.
So, Les, you're suggesting very aggressively that it's not a question of the low-income homeowners or people with credit card debt that are really creating the problem.
Absolutely not. That is a joke. It was completely the other way around. The story starts after World War II. Between World War II and 1970, productivity, the output per worker hour in the U.S. economy, went up and up and up, and so did real wages of the average American worker. They went up in tandem. That was the great miracle of modern American capitalism. But starting in the mid-1970s, something very unusual happened. Productivity continued to rise to this day. went up 90%. But wages, for the first time, didn't rise with productivity. They went flat and actually have gone down. These are real wages after you account for inflation. What happened to the rest of the big gap, this huge amount of money? Didn't go to working people, it went to the top. And that created the fantasy finance casino. It was out of those pools of money that you got the savings and loan crisis in the 80s. It was out of those pools of money that you ended up with the dot-com boom. And that then led to the housing boom, which pumped money into the subprime housing market. I mean, they were throwing mortgages at people. That was to prop up these financial instruments that were being created. And this didn't happen by accident. It was deliberate policy. I mean, when we started to deregulate the economy in the mid-70s, the beginning of globalization, the decline of unionization, money shifted to the top. I did one little study of the 1980s and showed that the net worth of the top 1% went up $1.4 trillion, while the net worth of the bottom 20% went down $250 billion. At the same time, the national debt went up exactly, almost penny for penny, the amount of money that went to the top 1%. So we went deeper into debt, lower-income people had less money, and policy shifted money up to the top. That created a casino. You could not invest all that money around the globe. And Wall Street people are smart. They came up with new ways. This is financial engineering. This is the great innovation. Create new bets for people to make. As long as things are going fine, huge amounts of money were made from these bets. Once things started to go a little sour, once housing prices just dipped a little bit, boom, the whole thing fell apart. So if you blame it on low-income people, it's like kind of you're blind. You're missing the whole game.
Now, wait a minute. You're telling me something, and I'm going to bait you a little bit
Please.
On this, and that is the auto workers aren't the ones with their lucrative pension plans, with their hourly rate, with on top of that their outrageous health care plans that are just causing the auto industry to be decimated and force it into bankruptcy. Good gracious.
America's favorite pastime is when things are bad, you blame the auto workers and you blame the government. But this time, I think you've just got to step back and realize what just happened. The financial system crashed right before our very eyes. The whole thing just went splat last September. And it's still, they're doing everything they can to piece it back together again because the economy can't run at all when the financial system tanks. Now, I would make the argument that the problem of the economy is not that auto workers were paid too much. The problem is that everybody else who was in the workforce was paid too little. We would not have this problem right now if real wages continued to go up with productivity. We risk the entire system when we allow income to flow to the top, tippy top 1%. That's how you get the most instability. That's what happened in the 1920s. It led to the crash. That's what happened again. When you get huge income disparities in the U.S. economy, you will get a crash. There have been study after study done that shows that tendency. That's what Keynes understood in the 1930s. But we forgot the lesson. We went back to pure deregulation. We allowed policies, anti-labor policies, basically, to set in that made it very difficult for people to keep up with inflation. We need every group of workers to have their wages go up, so there's not so much money floating around the top looking for a casino. That is the number one thing that has to be done. So, yeah, there are a lot of problems in the auto industry, but this crash, which had nothing to do with the auto industry, this crash has caused auto sales to go down over 40%. GM would have problems, but we would not be bailing them out right now if it weren't for the financial crash. This is something we cannot forget. The crash in the economy, the real economy as we call it, is entirely a result of the crash in the financial sector. This is not just a recession. This is a crash of the financial sector. And if folks take the time to look at Looting of America, the book that I've just written, which they can get anywhere, if they look at that book, it's easy to read. It'll walk them right through this process.
Because and it
we
really
can't
does.
Let amnesia set in, and we all of a sudden we say, oh, mm-hmm. It's a problem of the auto industry. It's a problem of this industry. It's not.
Yeah, the book is really wonderful, and that is The Looting of America, How Wall Street's Game of Fantasy Finance Destroyed Our Jobs, Pensions, and Prosperity, and it really does walk us through the crisis. But where I want to go now is, so what are the proposals that Wall Street wouldn't like? What is to be done? And, you know, I can certainly say short of a socialist system, which I still have a paramount belief in and absolutely do advocate and want to see the redistribution of wealth, and I know who creates the wealth. It's the workers, not the financiers. But what is to be done? Give us some of those proposals, Les Leopold.
Okay. The first one that I put on the table, and that's actually being discussed, is that nobody in the financial sector that's receiving federal support and subsidies should earn more than the President of the United States. No more multi-million-dollar salaries. And I say this not to promote a socialist dream. I'm going to be very hardcore capitalist practical here. We got to get money and people and brain power out of the financial sector and into the real economy. You can't continue this game of financial engineering. The Wall Street people say, oh, we're innovating. They're innovating bupkis. We need real innovation on energy. We need innovation on, you know, producing a decent healthcare system. We need a new infrastructure in America. We need people working on that. We do not need them lured into multi-million dollar salaries on Wall Street. That's a disaster.
And how about things like the minimum wage the Employee Free Choice Act? And
everything you can think of that will move money from the top to the middle and lower income is good for the economy. It creates a virtuous cycle. Working people spend their money in the real economy, and they don't put their savings into fantasy finance derivatives. So raising the minimum wage is critical. It's way behind what it was in the 1960s in real terms. Unionization has gone from about, 33% in the mid-50s down to less than 10%. The Employee Free Choice Act is, just from a strictly economic point of view, it's critical to give more bargaining power to working people. You need a steeply progressive income tax. You know, once you start getting up towards $1 million and up, you've got to pay a high percentage. You've got to go back to the 1950s where, you know, multimillionaires paid 90% of the next dollar in income taxes. You cannot let this money accumulate at the top. It doesn't work. And I'm not talking socialist terms. Look, we're in a period right now where you can bring up these proposals that a year ago would have seemed outrageously radical. They're now absolutely practical. As a matter of fact, when I was writing the book about putting in the wage cap stuff, I pick up the papers, we're going over the proofs, and the Obama administration and Congress are calling for wage caps on people in the finance industry. Of course, they've got a zillion loopholes in it, all of which need to be closed. Another one, which Wall Street will detest, is I believe there needs to be a small tax, I call it an insurance premium, on each and every financial transaction. Stock purchase, bond purchase, derivative purchase, currency float exchange, money moving rapidly all over the globe in nanoseconds in and out, a small tax on every time we do that. That would probably produce about $500 billion a year. Our share of it would have to be done kind of globally into the Treasury. We could come up with $500 billion a year in fees for the infrastructure of our economy, and that would move money from the fantasy finance economy into the real economy. We have to start thinking bold because this is an unprecedented disaster, and this is our golden moment. We can talk stuff like this right here, right now, and you will not be laughed off the stage. You won't be put into some, you know, lefty ghetto. This is mainstream conversation, and people will listen.
Well, if you're angry and if you're confused by the financial collapse and fallout, The Looting of America explains what happened, how and why, and what can be done to get out of the mess and make sure it doesn't happen again. Les Leopold blows away the myths that blame the collapse on low-income homebuyers and their subprime mortgages and the consumers buried in credit card debt. And thank you for doing that. And Les is absolutely right that this is an enormous opportunity to put on the agenda or to create a people's agenda where we can really take a hard look at the systemic inequities that are responsible for this crisis, and not we the workers. Les Leopold, thank you very much for spending some time with us.
Thank you, Mimi, for this opportunity.
My pleasure. And again, the book is The Looting of America, How Wall Street's Game of Fantasy Finance Destroyed Our Jobs, Our Pensions, and Prosperity, and most critically, what we can do about it.
I ain't got no money. I sure don't want to rob. Don't give me no charity. Just offer me a job and I'll be productive. I'll pay my taxes to the state. The best not way. Some bread upon my plate. I don't get no unemployment. I don't want no public aid. Just put me on the payroll and you might just well delay the revolution. The unemployed will take control. To protect them from the view of the people wearing dirty rags and begging for their food, while they're serving up a banquet for the membership inside. The poor man on the bottom's contemplating suicide because he feels worthless. His hunger pains beyond belief. There's no relief. We're gonna bring back
was Eddie Starr's The Return of Toxie's Army. And now, A Warning on Abominomics by William Tabb, Professor of Economics, Queens College and the City University of New York Graduate Center.
My contribution is to suggest the need to convey one message, and it is a message critical of a president we are all exceedingly glad to see in the White House. There are two parts of his economic program. You know, he's about as good as we've had for decades and decades. His choice of a Secretary of Labor, his appointments, National Labor Relations Board, you all know the things he's done, which have been very important. But first, a few things about the current economic situation. it is not recovering as fast as people would like or as the green shoots might indicate. Something like 6.3 million people have lost jobs since the recession started, although that's a very low number. Roughly, according to the Department of Labor, 16% of the labor force is either unemployed or underemployed, that is, or just not counted as being in the labor force. If you're not actively looking, you're not unemployed, you're out of the labor force. One out of nine Americans is receiving food stamps. So it is a really horrendous situation for working people. Employment and wages will not come back anytime soon, and that's going to impact on more people losing their homes, more defaults, more credit card, auto, and all of that. So that brings me to the two parts of Obama's recovery program. The first is his attempt to restore Wall Street to what it was. That is, in my view, a big mistake. The refusal to nationalize the banks, to break up the large banks like Citibank, Bank of America. We're now on the hawk for between $12 and $13 trillion, that's roughly the size of our economy, in bailout funds, loan guarantees, buying toxic, legacy assets, as the Secretary of the Treasury calls them. It's a lot of money. And we are now going to be faced with the second part, and that is the job creation, infrastructure building, an economy for the future. But there's going to be no money for it because the banks have already taken that. Interest rates are starting to go up. And the people who fostered the tax giveaways to the upper 1%, wars of choice, and built the deficit up to $1.2 trillion now complain it's up to $1.8 because tax revenues have gone down and Obama's trying to do something about the economy. So it is a very continually serious and prolonged situation for working people. And the point I would make to you is that the labor movement gives Obama free ride. It does not criticize that Geithner and Summers, people who are just so intimately in bed with the hedge funds and the private equity groups that have been destroying jobs in America. His auto team, which is composed of Wall Street people who are going to save General Motors by destroying the future and the retirement of American workers, who are going to bail out the bondholders while screwing the workers. This is the Obama administration. Now, I'm not suggesting frontally criticizing what is the best president we would ever have any hope of getting, but criticizing the actions of the economic team. People can understand the difference. And on the second part, and here again I'm dividing the economic program into these two parts, the financial, which I believe to be a total disaster. Those of you who follow Paul Krugman in the Times or any of the leading liberal economists who've been writing op-ed pieces explaining how we're getting screwed, it is very hard for ordinary people to understand the financial mess. They know we're being screwed, but they don't understand the bailout and how all this money, their money, is going to the banks and to, again, tremendous redistribution, as bad as Bush did, to the upper 1% of the income distribution through this bailout. And that's very important to try and explain. The other half is what is a progressive program, which Obama has dressed up in, not wrongly, investment in America's future, viewing education, healthcare, things that are important for working people, as important to the future of the country. That healthcare costs must be brought under control in a sensible way is his focus. But if it also means insuring all of the Americans who have no insurance and the underinsured, that would be good. But we're up against a machine that is not going to go for single payer and which will not allow single payer on the table, even though every survey of public opinion shows the country overwhelmingly wants single payer. That is something that we shouldn't give up on. It's something we need, we'll eventually get. How soon we get it depends on how active we are on that. Similarly on education, the kind of programs, investing in high tech, depends what kind of jobs, what kind of union protection, what kind of broader social perspective there is on these economic programs. So to sell it just as an investment in American competitiveness without talking about union jobs, jobs at decent wages that you can support a family. This green technology stuff can be done by non-union sweatshops when you're building solar panels. That's where it's being done. It doesn't have to be done that way. And so that the job of the labor movement is to critique and to push beyond the very cautious. And you have to say, Obama has made his compromises. He brings the people to the table, or the industry people who are now at the table, because they rhetorically endorse all these things. And then, as we're seeing with the banks have compromised these programs so much that they're basically setting us up for another financial crisis of this kind in 5 or 10 years. And so it is exceedingly important not to get caught up in, yes, this guy is such a breath of air and such a sensible and engaging, and the speeches are brilliant, and the progressive message is great, but he is leaving it to what the group he calls the propeller heads, the brightest people he can get. They're very smart, but they're very into a corrupt system, and they've compromised with that corrupt system to such a point that we will be exceedingly disappointed what comes out, unless there is pressure from labor for different kind of programs, is critical of these programs, pushes them in a better direction. If that doesn't happen, it'll continue to move in a direction we're not going to like. Thank you very much.
And that was A Warning on Obamanomics by Professor William Tabb.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our new website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.